Welcome to Season 6 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
Check out AllPlay's Tiny Game Bundle deal from December 2nd to the 11th. Save $15 on the full bundle, featuring the first 10 tiny box titles, including Rainbows, Fairy, Prey, Panda Panda, Slambo, For the Emperor, Terrible Quest, Llama Llama, Vivo, and of course, Soda Jerk. Go to allplay.com to check out these awesome deals. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, Episode 129, Gelk Galore. Today, we are joined by Anya and Arena Kagan, game designers of Gelt Galore.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
Of course. Well, I'm excited to have both of you on. I know I had met one of you at Gen Con, which was always kind of fun and chaotic, and I feel like I never remember anyone I met until I look at business cards later, so happy to have you on the show.
It was a blast meeting you, and I'm really excited to be able to be here with my sister, Anya.
Yeah, I had to skip Gen Con, but that's a whole thing, so.
Honestly, Gen Con is not my favorite, so I think you're fine. Well, before we dive into the actual game, mind talking a little about yourselves and how you got into designing board games?
Well, when we were young, our parents ensured our holiday gatherings were really wonderful and magical for us and just really made them special. And as adults, obviously, that kind of that magic's gone. The youngest generation has grown up, so we don't get their perspective. And while we still gather in the same way, it has over the years started to feel a little lackluster, a little bit routine for us.
So we've been trying to invent ways to make the holiday gatherings slightly more fun and more interesting. We've done word games and we've done
like Mad Libs and things like that to kind of give it some life, you know, or like pull out fortunes and just little games.
Just, yeah. And at one point, I'd come home for the Thanksgiving holiday and we were talking about what to do for the year. And I said, well, why not do a board game? And the conversation started about how it would be really difficult to do and creating the board itself is really hard. And then we'd have to figure out the questions and this, that, and the other. And I said, well, the board itself doesn't have to be hard. Like, it could look like this game, this other game that we had. It's not a very good game. But it's got interesting questions.
Don't say that. It's a fun game. Let's not bash the game. But yes, so we created the board with like a poster board and stickers, right? Like it was very homemade.
Oh, I've definitely DIY'd plenty of games in the past. My mom actually put up my first game I ever painted a board of onto my childhood wall for a few years.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she's too nice and supportive some days, but I think it's why I'm where I am right now. So I'm going to say thank you, Moosh.
Your mom sounds pretty awesome. But yeah, it started with the creation of this physical board and saying, yeah, we're just going to go in a circle and eventually we're going to go not in a circle.
Yeah, that's a great way to start. Start like Trivial Pursuit style or like Sorry or whatever, and then make it a new shape.
And then Anya started thinking about all the various question categories, and the original game was very, very family-centric, specific to our family. So the game questions and categories were something like favorite ice cream or what was your favorite book?
Family trivia was definitely a thing. It was like, how well do we know each other, right? Because it was very much focused on us and our family. Nobody ever had the idea of like, let's create a board game for the world initially. But it was really fun. We had a really great time.
There were 12 of us sitting there for that first time. So we got to really, really test it out. We spent a bunch of time answering questions or not knowing the answers to questions and really laughing about it, which made us want to share that laughter, that hilarity with other families who might experience something similar to ours, and then throw in more culture and less family-centric questions.
Yeah, so we had such a good time with like our little family version that then the idea came with of like, well, you know, other people might really enjoy it too. It could be really fun to turn this into something other people can play, can enjoy, isn't necessarily, you know, isn't so personalized to us. And so there were, of course, multiple iterations. We changed the design of the board. The board is in the shape of a menorah now, not a circle, although really you go around it in a very similar way. So we just started kind of playing with it, kind of experimenting and learning along the way as we did it. So we sort of very accidentally became game designers and decided to really put our effort and our focus on trying to turn this into something that isn't, you know, on poster board with little, what are they called? Like Avery square cards, but something that's actually, that is actually a game that you could play, you know?
Oh, that's so cool. And then for anyone who doesn't know what like Gelt Galore is, how do you play the game?
It's very straightforward, actually. It's a very, I guess they call it lightweight game. It's not very strategy heavy. You roll the die or you spin the dreidel, and then you move around the board and you land on a category, and then that category corresponds to a deck of cards. And somebody draws from that deck and either asks you a question or tells you an action to do. And if you get the question right, you get a little perk in the game, or the action might be to take a perk or to share a perk, or to, it could be even things like pay another player a compliment, right? So they're kind of just something that could make it festive and fun for everybody participating. There are certain spots that have specific actions to the spot itself, but that's fundamentally, that's what the game is you kind of just move around the board, and depending on the spot that you land on, you perform an action. And you get a little perk if you do it well.
Part of the transition from the original game is we originally designed it with candy and gifts and like tchotchkes, or what would you call them?
I mean, we went to the dollar store for the first time we played it, right? And just wrapped a bunch of little tiny things.
Yeah. So something probably closest in similarity to like little tiny stocking stuffers, but that's about as close to Christmas as it gets. And then we had to figure out how to make it accessible to more people, whether they wanted to go out and buy things, or if they wanted to play with candy, or if they just wanted to play with tokens that are part of the board. It's interesting trying to figure out how to make it more accessible. And then as part of that, everything that is on our board is very, very accessible to the colorblind community, because it's not just a color that you land on, but also a picture that corresponds to other pictures.
Yeah, it was really important to make it truly accessible. So for example, you know, a Hanukkah theme, we could have just stuck with spin the dreidel, but that's a really difficult thing to do if you have any kind of dexterity issues. Or if you're three. I mean, yeah, dexterity issues, little, old, disabled, whatever, right? Like, and so we actually are including a special die that is eight-sided, but it only has four options. So it mimics the odds of the dreidel, but is much easier to use for people with mobility issues. And so little things like that we try to focus on to make sure that really anybody, all ages, everybody can play. It is rated 8 and up. We should be clear on that. You know, we even have a special deck that is optional that people can play with for anybody who is younger or just doesn't know the holiday as well. Anybody who wants basically easier questions, there's an optional deck that you just draw from that deck instead of drawing from the main decks. So it's very inclusive as well. And Irina has been out in the world playtesting it with people who have no idea what Hanukkah is and who do know a little bit about the holiday. So she can talk a little bit more about that.
And kids who just want to spin the dreidel.
I feel like I would have been that, the adult that wants to spin the dreidel.
Oh, totally. And there's different ways of spinning the dreidel. And I think there's these fancy ways to do it. And then there's the obvious ways to do it. And then there's the, I just want to throw it
back. Yeah. And so you mentioned kind of asking questions. Is it like Hanukkah trivia? Like what kind of questions would you be asking on these cards?
Yes, so it is all Hanukkah trivia. We have trivia we have a category that is about kind of the traditional rules for the holiday, a category that is a little bit of potpourri. So it has kind of like contemporary trivia, media, that kind of stuff mixed in, and a category about the actual history surrounding the holiday as our main three trivia categories. And then we have an action category. And like I said, that easier deck, which just everything about the holiday, but just with a lighter touch.
I feel like I would definitely be playing in the lighter category.
I mean, I feel like even within the community of people who celebrate Hanukkah, not a lot of people will necessarily know a lot of the traditional, like, nitpicky things, which is part of the fun, right? Is you can learn something new.
I can honestly tell you that as many times as I've playtested this game, there are still questions in the history and in the media that I keep blanking on. They're not sticking in my head, and I know the answer, and I've played this 10, 15, 20 times now, and I still don't know.
It's like I'm not a huge Christmas person. Like, it's not my favorite holiday. Halloween is. But I'm trying to think, like, I can think of many movies that are Christmas themed, but I'm trying to think of how many would be Hanukkah themed, and I am blanking on it.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but Hallmark has started putting out Hanukkah movies. They do only about one a year. They tend to be not great in terms of cultural sensitivity.
Oh no!
Sometimes they're improving.
I thought you were just gonna say they're not good, because like that is normal.
I mean, they started with like, we're gonna teach the Jewish character what Christmas is, and it's like, we know, we grew up in this world, we know what Christmas is, you know. So they started there, but they are improving with time, and I think Lifetime put one out last year as well, so we're getting a little bit more of the media. But that's part of why we didn't go with a full media category, right, is because there just isn't that much to draw from.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Were there any other categories you decided not to do for similar reasons?
Well, for media specifically, because we mixed in music and movies, there isn't enough of any one category.
Yeah, we didn't really have that problem with the other ones.
There isn't enough Hanukkah-specific music. There isn't enough Hanukkah-specific movies. So the media category is very mixed in terms of what's inside it.
It became a potpourri category, right? So we talk about, like, when was Hanukkah first celebrated at the White House, right? So it's sort of like contemporary culture as opposed to just media. But like our original game, we had the family version one. We had like an around the world category, right, of how do people celebrate, and there just weren't enough questions and that we were able to find in our research of like to fill a full category of just international traditions and international celebrations. So that also got lumped in a little bit into the potpourri category. So we talk about how other places will celebrate Hanukkah and their traditions, but it wasn't full enough to be its own category in this version of the game.
How did you go about researching your different categories?
Some talking to people who are more observant than us, who just know things that we don't necessarily know. A lot of Googling and double-checking sources and triple-checking sources and making sure that we're really going with something that's authentic as opposed to something that is just citing something else that they saw that may or may not be accurate.
Historical dates were not fun.
Oh yeah, that was a challenge. People do not agree about the exact historical dates. And then we also have to convert them between the Hebrew calendar and the Gregorian calendar.
And nobody agrees on those either.
No. So there were challenges there. But a lot of reading, basically, right, is a lot of reading and just doing the research into the holiday itself. There's a text called the Shulchan Aruch, and I may be mispronouncing that, and if so, I'm sorry. But so reading for the traditional observance category, just reading through the actual, like, here are the rules for how to observe Hanukkah text that exists, and right, just going through that and pulling questions that we thought hopefully wouldn't be too terribly difficult for people who haven't read that, or for people who forgot it, because it's been a while since the questions were pulled from it and they read it. So just, yeah, just trying to find authentic sources and find questions that were interesting, but balanced between too easy and too hard.
That's so interesting. Like, I recently played a game called Deadline. So it's about how people died. So it's like a mix of like their dates of like when they were born, when they died, and how old they were. And I was like, oh, this is kind of morbid. And you're trying to rank them like timeline style. But I felt really bad because there'd be ones where you could try to take a guess on how they died in order to like get extra points. And I was just like, yeah, but we would be arguing. We're like, but was it suicide or was it this? And we're just like, oh, this is the worst. Like, I feel like such a bad person.
No.
I would have hated to research that.
Yeah, I feel like that's not really the vibe that we're going for.
Oh, definitely sure. Not. But it's just like my brain immediately went to like, oh, that researcher. I have a food game where I had to like double check the person who had done the content. Because we just trying to figure out, like, location-wise, do we do the location that the food originated from or where it became most popular? And because, similar to how you guys were describing, some countries were non-existent or they were, like, a bunch of things combined or, like, yeah, depending on, like, what time period this food was created. So trying to figure out, like, what is, quote-unquote, correct was very difficult.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. There's a specific story that is also, like, there's the heroine, Hannah in the Hanukkah story is potentially three different people who in some sources are unnamed and in some sources are given the name Hannah. And so it's just like, which one are we going with? Because you can't call all three people one the same name in one game. Like, it would become too confusing. So there were challenges like that as well.
And in some sources, there are no female heroines, but That's also not true.
Yeah, that's just not accurate.
Delving into the deep and trying to figure out what in a truly patriarchal society is and is not relevant.
And as you can imagine, some of these women's stories thousands of years ago, they weren't particularly cheerful. And so, right, we also had to make kind of decisions about, well, we're not mentioning something that dark in a game that's all about just making people happy, right? It is part of the history of the holiday, but it doesn't necessarily have to be part of this game.
We did ask a question about a beheading, but that is actually part of the history.
That is as dark as we got.
Please tell me this story.
Oh, okay. So this is a different female heroine of Hanukkah called Judith, or Yehudit in Hebrew. Fundamentally, what the story is her town was being besieged by the Greek Assyrian army, and she went out from her town that was, you know, fortified, barricaded, and she went into the enemy camp with a bunch of wine and cheese, and she seduced the general with a bunch of wine and cheese and got him super drunk, and the cheese was salty, so he was drinking more wine and all this stuff, and he fell asleep, and she beheaded him and then carried his head back into town hidden under like her shawl and then put it up on the wall, and it terrified the enemy army and she scared them all away.
Honestly, badass,
right? She's amazing. Exactly. So
I was gonna say, I was like, kind of a heroine, no offense.
Yeah, no, she absolutely is.
Again, it's not somebody that you generally hear about, but fascinating.
Yeah, a lot of people only talk about the Maccabees, which are a huge part of the story, of course, but we definitely wanted to highlight that, like, they're not the only ones who were fighting back. They're not the only ones who were doing their part or who were heroic.
No, that's really cool. I worked on a game called Her Story, so I learned about, like, 120 amazing women through history while working on the game, and it was, like, quite a few of them I'd learned in school, but a lot more of them I hadn't. So it's interesting to see, like, what these people have done and, like, why didn't I hear about them sooner?
Right? And that game sounds awesome because highlighting the contributions of women is definitely important work because it very much gets overlooked.
So say three women.
Well...
Yeah, okay. Fair. We were a little biased.
Maybe.
All right. Well, it's fine.
Still gonna assert it as something that we can all agree on, at least.
That's totally fair. And so you guys kind of mentioned, like, you get perks in the game, and is it just, like, coins and you switch them out? Because you kind of mentioned going to, like, the dollar store. I want to know how those work.
So I mentioned how in the original, like, family play, we did dollar store wrapped gifts.
We exchange presents. As a family.
We did exchange presents. And then we transitioned to playing with candy. And we decided that there are two different ways of giving gifts or getting treats or perks in this game. So we had to have a larger candy and a smaller candy. And then we needed to figure out a way to call, something to call them for the game to make them work. And eventually it came out to perks for the bigger ones and treats for the smaller ones.
Yeah, and so we do have tokens in the game that correspond to each one. So if you don't want to exchange candy or you don't want to go to the dollar store or wherever, right, like you can just play with, like you said, you take one type of token for a perk, you take another type of token for a treat. There are different times where you might be told to give some away or to take them from somebody else. And so they kind of get exchanged, trade them, swap them for, you know, something that you like. At its core, the game is meant to be played with actual treats, though. So because it's Hanukkah focused, we have gelt as kind of one of the more common things. But even then, we recommend different sizes or different types of gelt so you can distinguish between what's a perk and what's a treat. We also have a version of the rules included in the game where you actually do play as a present exchange among the entire group. So it's a little bit like the white elephant parties where everybody brings, you know, one gift and then the game facilitates kind of who gets to open a gift, who gets to swap gifts, who gets to do things like that. Basic idea is that everybody's kind of walking away with some kind of fun, yummy, potentially, or presents or something that they get to kind of keep at the end of the game where everybody... we try is it's more or less balanced, right? Where like the present version, everybody gets, you know, their one big present in the present version and then maybe some little treats on the side and things like that. So the idea is that everybody walks away a winner because the whole point is to have fun and not necessarily to compete.
Right. And then, you know, making it less about, not so much less, but more accessible and more interesting for the more competitive people in our world. With the introduction of the tokens and treats instead of candy or presents, then there's a way to keep score and know who really, really won.
Yeah, if you really need that, there is an option for that as well. That's true. We try to give it kind of you multiple choices for what your community kind of prefers. Because some people do. They really want a winner, right? They want somebody to win the game at the end of the game. And it wasn't, you know, our focus was more like, everybody have a good time. But if you really, really want to win, there is a way to just declare a winner. And then we offer some suggestions of like, what the prize can be, right? Like you can pick the next game people play, or you can pick the movie everybody watches, or like any small little thing that you can kind of walk away with and go, haha, I'm the winner. We do have suggestions for that as well in the rule book.
That's so fun. I feel like secretly you just needed a reason to get gifts and you're like, let's play test my game.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely plied people with candy when we were trying to get them to play test the game. And that was certainly a draw for a lot of people. It wasn't like, come play test the game. It was like, come play a game where you get candy.
I definitely bought a lot of chocolate, but I also, I had to find things that weren't chocolate for people who don't or can't have chocolate.
Jolly Ranchers, right?
I did do Jolly Ranchers. And, it's some people can have Snickers and some people can only have pure chocolate. So I made sure I had pure chocolate at the same time as I had fancy candy bars. But you come to an open game night, like Barnes & Noble's locally has one on Tuesday nights, and you bring a game to test and a bag of candy, and all of a sudden people get really excited.
Yes. Okay, where is this Barnes & Noble located? That sounds awesome.
So I live in Michigan, in a small town that a lot of people know about but don't actually know it exists. It's called Kalamazoo.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh. I've been there.
Oh, okay.
Okay, cool. Most people only know about it from Frank Sinatra.
I was going to school in the Chicago suburbs, and one of my friends was actually from Kalamazoo who came to my school. So I visited like one weekend with her.
Oh, very cool.
Very cool. So there's apparently a fairly large gaming community here in Kalamazoo. So Barnes & Noble's decided that on Tuesday nights, especially during the summer, they were just going to host a bring your game and play night.
Aw, that's awesome. Way to build the community.
Exactly. It's definitely a way to get people that you'll never otherwise meet to come and test your game.
Yeah, the purely blind playtest, which is great.
Oh, that is so nice. I definitely miss having more of that locally. I've slowly started finding people, but before that, I was definitely bribing friends and people that go to my gym with pizza or beer, or both. Nice.
Your version of chocolate and candy.
Pretty much, yeah. I think mine might be a little more expensive than going to the Dollar Tree.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, I definitely did that with my orchestra friends. If we had a long enough break, I would say, hey, can you guys help me out? I just want to take some pictures or videos or get some impressions.
That's so cool. And then for anyone who's like unfamiliar with Hanukkah, do you want to go over that and also what Gelt Galore means for you guys?
Well, gelt, which is the easier question to answer to start. Gelt is the Yiddish word for money that has become associated with chocolate coins in gold foil that are traditionally shared during Hanukkah now, especially in the United States. It used to be that people would give money for Hanukkah, and now we focus on the chocolate version. But Hanukkah is one of the many holidays that we have that celebrate us not being wiped out as a Jewish people in a specific region. It happens in December, sometimes late November, because it's by the Hebrew calendar, which moves around compared to kind of our standard calendar. And it's all about, it's a festival of light. It celebrates the miracle of the oil that was not sullied, the one little jug of oil that was pure, lasting the 8 days it needed to for them to be able to get more oil to light the menorah in the temple once they were able to reclaim the temple from the enemy forces.
So in order to celebrate this miracle of the oil, this miracle of light, we light candles, adding a candle for each day. And some people still do oil-based candles instead of the wax candles that a lot of us feel safer with. On top of that, it was because it is a celebration, and for a lot of cultures, food is the biggest part of a celebration. They had to figure out ways to make oil a celebratory food. So you end up getting fried cheese, like mozzarella sticks.
More traditionally, there's latkes, jelly donuts, in terms of cheese, cheese and dairy products have become part of the tradition in order to celebrate Judith and what she did, the woman that we were talking about earlier, because as to bring kind of more attention to her because she used cheese. So that dairy products have been, they're a little bit newer in terms of the celebration, and they've been brought into it as a way to commemorate her.
But I did want to ask, and this is actually a question in one of our cards, since you are familiar with latkes, Danielle, what would you prefer to have them with?
Applesauce.
Sour cream is the other option, and it is a big debate.
Big, giant debate between the two.
Yeah, no, applesauce. I'm pure applesauce all the time. That's so funny. I wonder if I'm on the right or wrong side of it.
Is there a right or wrong side?
I'm just happy to eat them.
Yeah, there's that, right? And everybody's latke recipes are a little bit different, but families definitely tend to fall on one side or the other, right? It'll be like, this is the only way to do it, which is really funny to have that little schism in terms of latkes and how we celebrate.
No, I've been very lucky in my adult life, past like college, making more and more friends that are Jewish and inviting me to like some of the different holidays I didn't know existed. And I feel like Hanukkah is, to anyone who is not Jewish, like the big holiday, when every time I hear about these other ones, I feel like they're more important, or not more important, but like more our level of Christmas.
Yeah, so Hanukkah is not considered a major holiday. It's not a holiday that that precludes things like working, because it's, you know, a somber religious observance or anything like that. It is a holiday that's more suited to a board game, in part because of that, because the observance is about just kind of having fun. And playing the dreidel game is a big part of the classic dreidel game is a big part of celebrating the holiday. And it is very lighthearted and easygoing compared to some of the more tradition-heavy holidays.
In terms of the time of year that it takes place, it's lucky for us that it takes place in the winter. So, you know, the lighting of the candles is joyful, and the sharing of food and of gifts is similar enough to the other dark of winter holidays that it's okay and it makes sense. Then, you know, you said you love Halloween, so I would encourage you to read or learn about Purim.
Oh, yeah. My friend Sonia's mentioned it before.
There's some things that overlap in terms of, do you get dressed? And sure, you dress up in costumes and you give out gifts of food, because food is important, or cookies or candy, but it takes place in the spring instead of the fall.
Yeah, it takes place usually around March.
And is also based on a female heroine.
Yep, that's true. It does celebrate one of our main women heroes, Esther. The other thing I was going to say about Halloween is we've actually been talking about how well the mechanics of this game could translate to a Halloween game, because it is based on like treats, right? We've played with candy. It works well with candy. Halloween, obviously, very candy-centric holiday. Keep an eye out. If we can do this, we may well be making a Halloween version soon.
That's so fun. Now, what did you guys find to be your favorite part of working on this game?
Well, for me, it's the playtesting side, because I got to play with a lot of people who come in saying, oh, I don't know anything about this. Finding out that, A, they know a lot more than they thought, and B, because this is non-competitive, about how people went around giving hints for answers and what was considered allowed at one table and wasn't allowed at another table.
Yeah, just in general, kind of seeing people actually enjoy the game, because that was the whole point, right? Is to bring that joy and that laughter to other people the way that it brought those things to our family, I think would definitely be our favorite part. Our least favorite part is...
Oh, you knew I was going to ask.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I did listen to your podcast, so I knew what's coming next.
I was like, wow, this is perfect. Just let me sit here.
Yeah, no, I was going to say the least favorite part is marketing. That is, we are terrible at it. It is definitely a weak point for us, and there's so many things out there that are fun and that clamor for attention, and just kind of finding our space and our path forward for that has been a challenge, because we're very behind-the-scenes kinds of people. So even something like this is us stepping out of our comfort zone, because we want to bring the game to the world and give it a shot. But we're very much like pre-beginner when it comes to marketing. It's definitely a challenge for us.
Thank you for making it easier, Danielle.
Yay! I'm glad. And I mean, I'm glad it's airing around the holiday too, so it'll be very appropriate.
Yes, which will be really good.
And did you ever consider like pitching this game, or was it always like, we have to self-publish it?
We did look at what pitching would look like in terms of kind of just finding out what would be required and what the process would look like and how long it would take and things like that. I think partially, this is a little bit of a tangent, but partially because of my experience as an author and working in publishing in that direction, I was a little gun shy in terms of handing things over to a publisher. And also there's that the timeline of getting that to happen is a bit longer than what we were able to do here. The world is difficult right now. And so we wanted to bring joy to people kind of as quickly as we could and the best way that we could, which, you know, in this case was, well, we can manage the design and things like that ourselves, as it turned out, more or less. People will tell us if we succeeded or failed.
Anya, you did brilliantly. Your artwork is awesome.
Well, thank you very much. Stock image sites are a great best kept secret. And we wanted to bring this to the world and see if it did what we wanted it to do, which is just make people happy without kind of jumping through hoops or waiting for a year to hear back from a publisher or things like that.
Yeah, there's definitely perks and downfalls to both sides, but it makes sense, especially if you've worked in publishing and this is very content heavy and you don't want someone messing with it, especially if it's part of like your heart almost.
Right. Just finding a publisher who would respect the culture and not try to influence the content in a way that wasn't going to be authentic would also have just been a big challenge. So
yeah, oh totally. And how long do you think it took from that initial game that you kind of put together to it being out for people to play?
By the time this airs, it'll be almost exactly 2 years.
Perfect. That's awesome. That's a good amount of turnaround.
With a lot of playtesting on a lot of versions behind your
yes,
back.
Yes, a lot of different versions.
That is how games should go. If you printed the first version, I would be scared.
Yeah, I mean, you'd also find out a lot of really personal things about our family if we went with that first version.
Oh my god, no, wait, that would have been real funny, actually. And do you have any, like, biggest takeaways from the experience of working on your first game?
Slower is better.
Which we did not listen to.
Don't rush it.
We did not listen to that at all. That it's good advice that we should listen to now and for the future. I think also just it is harder than you think it is, but it's also one of those things where like if you get started and you do the work, it's absolutely doable.
And the community is unbelievably friendly.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So people are very welcoming, very helpful. Very experienced people will give advice to people who have no idea what they're doing, like us.
Thank you, Danielle.
Yeah. Well, yes, including you.
Oh my gosh.
So just kind of, I think the biggest takeaway is just if this is something that interests you at all, like dip your toe in and kind of see if you keep getting sucked in. And then if you do, you might end up with a cool, fun game. And that's great.
Aw, I love that. And also fun fact, the Gen Con presentation that I did, that was the first time I've ever presented alone with a PowerPoint I had to pre-make. I joke this all the time. I hate public speaking. I get lots of anxiety out of it. Hopefully it didn't seem like it from me presenting.
Your presentation was awesome.
Yay, happy to hear it. But yeah, no, I don't love doing it. And that was my first time. And I was so thankful I didn't have tech issues beyond the very end when I shouldn't have disconnected the cord too soon. And so people had to take pictures of my actual screen to get my info. But definitely better at improvising than acting. I'm terrible at memorization.
You know, Anya was talking about dipping your toe in. And then there's us, where we just dived headfirst into it without seeing the bottom of the pool.
Yeah, as we mentioned before, we never really sat down and thought about, oh, what does it mean to be a game publisher? That kind of came after we went, oh, we have a game. And then, oh, wait.
Or even, oh, what's a game convention?
Conventions versus trade shows and everything, just figuring out kind of the landscape, because it's a huge community. I mean, as you obviously know, it's a big ecosystem, and just kind of figuring out where we can fit in into that ecosystem came later for us. And I think maybe should have come a little bit earlier.
I think those are really good lessons to learn though. Cause I mean, I still wonder sometimes if I'm spending my time in the right places, cause there are so many conventions and trade shows and gatherings and playtest conventions. It's like, what are your goals? And then figure out which ones make the most sense. And then also geographically where you're located factors in, and how much, you know, time off you have from work. There's a lot. Totally relate to these things. And then my last question, unrelated to everything we've already chatted about, if you could have been the designer of a game that's already published, which game would you have wished it was?
Okay, pure nerdery. When I first saw the Kickstarter for Luthier, I was over the moon excited because as a violinist, you see games about music, but they're abstract. There's nothing cultural or historically relevant about a lot of them. They'll know the instruments of the orchestra, but that's as deep as they go. And Luthier hit all the buttons for me in terms of pure nerdery. The materials that you have to collect in order to create your instruments and the patrons that you have to encourage to support you as you play the game. It's so relevant and it just makes my little musician heart very, very happy.
I think we're both nerds because my answer is also very nerdy. It's A Place for All My Books, which is a brand new game, very recently came out. And aside from the fact that our family are very avid readers, all of us, and I'm an author and a fiction editor, and so very much thematically, I'm like, oh, this game sounds so great. And then on top of that, it has lovely art. It looks like a very fun, lighthearted game. I haven't had a chance to play yet, unfortunately, because I did get copies, but I got them for other people for gifts. So, it's a little painful from that perspective, but I can't wait to play that, and very much that's like, oh, I wish I had thought of that and like had the skills to create that and everything. So,
well, I'll let you know it's a really good game. I got to play test it and I now own it too. It is so fun. It's also just really cute, the idea of like being a little introvert and like rearranging your books, giving you some energy to go out into the world, and then it gets drained and you gotta come back home.
I mean, that sounds like daily life.
That sounds so accurate. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I was like, I'm an extrovert, but I can still relate to a lot of it. And most of my friends are introverts. And so I'm just like, oh yeah, this is why I can't see them today. They're just home rearranging their books.
Yes.
I have had Luthier on my list to play though, because I like music too. And I was curious to see if it was actually going to be like real music or just like pasted on themes, or yeah, I don't know. I'm always curious to see how players do it.
Just purely based on reading about the game and the components of the game and the specials and expansions, I'm really hoping that it lives up to my dreams. Knowing that their dice tower is a musical organ, as in keyboard organ and not body organ, is really, really, really fun. They had the cutest pin at Gen Con. It's the only pin that I bought. It's a violin in its case with the words "just in case" on it.
Because you're a nerd. Yeah.
Aww, so I love it.
I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
I was going to say cheeky and adorable.
Yeah, exactly. I fully immersed myself in the nerdery of Gen Con when I had the chance. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, see, I've played, like, some of Devere's music-themed games, like Rock Hard, 1977, and, like, Lacrimosa and stuff, and so I'm always curious to see how they apply those themes into the mechanics, and if it actually feels like the thing you're doing. Yeah, both games are fun.
Well, then I'm even more excited to play At Least for All My Books whenever somebody who isn't supposed to know that it's a gift for that person, but is currently having this conversation with us, decides to play with me.
That's so funny. That is the crap I do for my siblings. Buy them things that I actually care about.
I know she'll like it too, right? Like, because I'm very, very confident. But yes.
It also helps that my birthday is around all of this holiday gift giving time. So I get to, say, hey, this is what I want. And if not, just ask me. Yeah. I'm going to forget.
She gets to double dip a little bit in December.
That's perfect. And did you have any other games that are coming out? I know you kind of mentioned maybe jokingly a Halloween one, or is this kind of the focus for right now?
This is definitely the focus now.
I've definitely tried to rein in Anya a little because she's the fast-paced person and I'm the slow down, we have to think about it person.
Okay. Oh yeah, I'm very much like, oh, I have this idea and then now I want to make it. And so that is a thing. So that's why I'm saying this is the focus right now, because we really want to give this game as much support as we can to give it a shot. The Halloween game, not a joke. I very much have a plan in my head of how that's going to happen. So it's just a question of when.
There you go.
I actually have people who have been following us and really love the idea of our characters coming out as cookie cutters that are desperately looking forward to the Halloween version of it, because the cookie cutter will be so, so cute if we ever make it.
It's true.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, I mean, eventually we kind of have to go the Christmas route because it is a big popular holiday gift giving thing.
We don't have to, but it's likely. It works well with the mechanics of the game. It's not like we're not, there's no gun to our head, right? But like, there's a good chance that we'll also try to make a more mainstream Christmassy version at some point if we can.
You got to go where your passions lead you. And we love researching the holidays and playing into our culture more is right now more important, but our culture is also so diverse that we can pick and choose at the moment.
Well, there you go. I definitely would check out a Halloween one. Christmas I'd probably play, but I mean.
Yeah, you said it's not your favorite, so.
It's not my favorite. I just, yeah, I feel like I've always liked Halloween or Christmas is just hit or miss fair, depending on the year.
Because Halloween is awesome.
Halloween is more consistent. It knows what it is.
Oh, true. So true. There's way better movies, in my opinion.
I think that's true. They're a very different vibe for Halloween.
Oh my god, yes. The crossover with Krampus-y kind of things. I'm okay. I'm good.
Oh my goodness.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much to everyone who's been listening to our awesome tangents, fun facts on Hanukkah, and all other related things. This has been Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 129, Gelt Galore. And I appreciate the both of you coming on. This was hilarious, and I feel like I learned a lot, and I'm hungry now. So thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for having us and for being willing to follow all of our various tangents with us.
Oh my God, yes. And for anyone who's trying to find your game, where can they find it?
We are at giftsgaloregames.com. So that's where you would go to find us primarily. And then we're also on Facebook as Gifts Galore Games. We're very consistent in terms of kind of the name of the company. If you know that, you can find us.
And to think you said marketing wasn't a strong suit. That was a good choice.
Thank you very much.
And I've been your host. I'm Danielle Reynolds, and I have two social media things, so not as great, but you know, Token Gamer, spelled G-A-Y-M-E-R, on Instagram and Blue Sky, and then Game Design Unboxed not only is a podcast, but we also have an Instagram and a TikTok now, so people can listen or watch, depending on how much time they have or their interest. So yeah, I'm excited to have this one air. And now I kind of feel like I need to do a quick video on fun facts we've learned from this episode when this does air.
I mean, that would be fun, but I think that sounds like a lot of work for you for some very random facts.
Oh no, I'm going to do a recap anyway. So I'll just throw in one, or I'll ask people what they think when it comes
there
to
you go, yes.
Versus sour cream
the
debate.
People.
That's a great one.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on this show. I hope the game goes well in the holiday season.
Thank you so much, Danielle.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out NoDirectionPodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out AllPlay at Let'sAllPlay.com. Join us next time.